BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening. Hello and welcome everyone to another episode of BDNG Meets Podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I'm the lead education nurse for the BDNG. And today I have the great pleasure in introducing Suzanne Maloney. I'm sure many of you know her. She's a very, very vocal patient voice for HS and has had HS since 12 years old. She's done a lot of talks for us, so I'm sure you've seen Suzanne at one or two of our face-to-face meetings. And I have really excited today about recording this podcast with Suzanne. So welcome, Suzanne, today.
Thank you for having me, Tina. It's a pleasure and an honour to be here.
Absolutely. No, it's great to have you. So, Suzanne, can we just start right at the beginning? I know you've done some fantastic talks for us in the past, but can we start right at the beginning, your journey with HS? We know as clinicians it is difficult. You know, we're limited with treatments. We know these journeys patients have been on. So can we just sort of start right at the beginning and just talk us through your experience?
Of course. Yeah, I'd love to. So I suppose I'll start with when I was a little child, and I was born in the 80s. I had a very normal childhood, very happy childhood, and I had no major health issues or problems until I turned about 12. And I started to develop these lesions on my bikini area. And I was going through puberty, so my body was changing a lot anyway. And you know, we had just learned about sex in school, and, you know, I was so freaked out by these lumps that were coming and going in my private parts, basically. And I felt a huge sense of shame and embarrassment. And I actually hid this from my parents. And that's very common for patients to hide their symptoms due to the shame of where they're located a lot of the time. And it takes an average of 3 years for patients to actually seek help in the first place. So my parents were pharmacists and we used to have a lot of medical books at home. And I would take the books and squirrel away up to my bedroom and read them and try and diagnose myself. And I would try to find different treatments that I could do at home and things that I could get from the pharmacy. And sometimes they worked and most of the time they didn't. And these lesions would burst, they would drain, and then they'd leave a scar and they'd come back. And they were getting worse and worse. And over time, they got so bad that I eventually had to tell my mum when I was 17. And she brought me straight to the doctor. And the doctor treated me with antibiotics for skin infection. And unfortunately, the doctor wasn't aware of HS. So he kind of just thought I had a general skin infection, gave me antibiotics, and this did resolve the problem, but it came back. So I went back to the doctor, got more antibiotics, and this became a cycle for me until, every couple of months, I would be going to the doctor, I'd be on antibiotics, until I was about 20, and it got particularly bad, and the doctor thought I had cellulitis, so he sent me to the emergency room, and I had my first surgery. And I was still undiagnosed at this stage. And if you think even about the years or what your life events between the age of 17 and 20, you know, I had my 18th birthday, I finished school, I started college, and this was with me the whole time. It was always kind of in the back of my mind, and I was always trying to treat it and manage it and kind of get on with my life. So my first surgery was quite a big one, and it was on my kind of perianal area. And I started to recover from that, but then the lesions started to spread further. So they eventually, by the time I was kind of 20, 21, I was getting them all around my pubic area, my pubic bone, my inner thighs, my perianal area, and my armpits. And I kept going back to the doctor, and he eventually referred me to a colorectal surgeon because he thought maybe I have cutaneous Crohn's, or maybe I have Crohn's disease, but that was ruled out. And But this colorectal surgeon still performed a lot of surgeries on me because of the location of the lesions. And there was a lot of tunneling. And some of them were very complex, actually. And you know, he had to be very careful about where he was cutting because it was so close to my bum, basically. And he was baffled by me because he did the surgery. I would start to heal, and then I'd be back within 6 months for more surgery or with more lesions, and he would do more surgery. So after the third surgery, he started looking into what it could possibly be, because apart from this, I was very healthy, active, well, reasonably active, young person. I'd no other major health conditions. And he finally diagnosed me when I was 23 with HS. So that's just more than 10 years from the first onset of my symptoms, which is very common, unfortunately. And that's why I'm so grateful for the opportunity to speak to you today, because once you're aware of HS, it's actually very easy to diagnose. And, you know, 10 years of wondering what's wrong with me, trying to find different solutions and treatments. When you have HS, you obviously take the medicine that the doctor has prescribed and you do the surgeries, but you also try to look at your own life and say, what am I doing that's causing this? Am I doing something wrong here? And so I had tried, you know, lots of different diets, eliminating different food. I'd tried acupuncture and lots of alternative therapies. You're so desperate, you try anything. And it's very bittersweet being diagnosed, because you finally have a name to your disease and you're like thinking, yes, we are going to be able to treat this and I'll be cured and I can get on with my life. 23 at this stage. So I was quite, you know, excited about the prospect of not having to deal with this. But then, you know, the doctor told me, you know, it's not fully curable. There's definitely treatments that can reduce the severity and the symptoms, but you're going to have this for life, and you kind of need to adjust your or adapt your lifestyle to this disease. So it was hard to hear. And there's a few other things that the surgeon said to me, and I remember being so freaked out by him because of the location of a lot of my lesions. I remember him telling me it might be very difficult to actually give birth to a baby because I've so much scarring. And that, like, I might have complications there later in life. And also, because of the locations of the lesions, I might end up, if they tunnel more, I suppose, deeply into my kind of perianal area, I might end up with some kind of incontinence issues in the future as well. So that was absolutely devastating to hear as a 23-year-old. But, you know, you kind of have to pick yourself up and keep going with your life. So I tried my best to do that. A few points about HS. When I was younger, I was very active. I was very sporty. I used to play rounders and softball. I used to run races. I was very athletic and I used to love swimming. And very slowly over time, I started to drop out of all those activities that I loved, because I was either, you know, recovering from a surgery, or I had, you know, these lesions that were draining and leaking all over the place. And I either just felt I couldn't participate, or I didn't want to be seen in swimming togs or in shorts. And also I was in a lot of pain a lot of the time too. So HS kind of strips away parts of your life that you love, and things that people take for granted, even things like just wearing the clothes that you like, becomes a challenge when you're trying to hide and cover up this disease. So I usually talk about the diary of a HS flare, Tina, and it's quite visual, so I can talk through it and try and describe it as best.
Yeah, well, I mean, listening to you there, I didn't want to interrupt, because it's fascinating, you know, to talk about so openly about your journey is, you know, quite inspirational. And you know, it's hard to speak about these events that happened, especially as a young person as well. I just, before we start that, I just want to pick up on a couple of points. The first one being, you know, we do know to get a diagnosis is very, very difficult. I mean, you mentioned that even 3 years before you actually sought help as well. But I mean, you know, the average we know is 7 to 10 years before you get a correct diagnosis. So how do you feel about that? Do you feel that, you know, we're getting better educating people, or do you think a lot more education needs to be done? And how do we go around that? What's your thoughts on that, Suzanne?
I think it's both. I definitely think since I've started doing what I do now, there's been a huge shift in awareness of HS. And when I used to attend conferences, people would come and talk to me about, oh, what is this? What is HS? And now they're coming and talking to me saying, I know this, I have patients with this. And so there's definitely been a shift in that sense, where there is greater awareness. But I definitely think there's way more needed as well. Mm-hmm. It needs to be, like, HS is as common or as prevalent as psoriasis. And Everyone knows about psoriasis. And I suppose that's where we need to be in terms of knowledge on HS, is kind of being able to recognize it, because it is, it is very recognizable once you know what it is. And that's, so I suppose it's no one's fault if it's not taught on curriculum and it's not, you know, part of your learning. But once you are aware of it, it's just very easy to recognize and diagnose. Yeah. And if you're not sure, you could refer a patient on to, a GP or a dermatologist to confirm your suspicions. But in essence, if the patient has had an outbreak of one or more boils in any of the common areas, which is the armpits, the groin, the buttocks, the inner thigh and the breast, in the last 6 months, it's most likely HS. Yeah. And that's kind of it. So when I'm talking to nurses, and I say there's so many opportunities to ask questions. If you see scarring on the skin in any of those areas, all you have to do is ask, you know, oh, do you get kind of boil-like lesions in those areas quite frequently? Because if they do, it's most likely HS.
I think that's the misconception sometimes, isn't it? We feel as healthcare professionals, you have to be an expert, but it's not a case of that, because, you know, we have a lot of nurses seeing patients, and, you know, you can, you know, make that person aware that they possibly have HS, or, you know, the treatments that are available, or actually just reassurance, listening. And, you know, I must admit, when you mentioned there about, you know, it being talked about a lot more in conferences, as a healthcare professional, it's a lot more exciting and inspirational to hear a lot more about HS, where it was always on the back burner before, you know, psoriasis was up there, eczema then was up there. But now it seems to be HS is a lot more talked about, which is really, really, really reassuring. So I think we are getting better, Suzanne. We just need to improve even more and get these education out there, definitely.
And you're right, the interest in HS is fantastic, and I love that there is an appetite to learn, which is very exciting too.
And there's lots. We were talking recently about a recent conference, and, you know, people are getting excited about the new treatments, and that's really great to take back to patients. I know we're not there yet, but, you know, to take that back to patients that, you know, they're developing new treatments, they're going to be on the horizon, you know, people are looking at HS. So, I mean, even that is reassuring, definitely. We're definitely on the right pathway, which is good. Mm-hmm. So the other thing you mentioned when you were going through your journey there, which is often sometimes not discussed with patients, and it's really important, I think, to document this, is the pain. You know, patients suffer pain with HS, and it's one of these things that, you know, sometimes is dismissed. I mean, how do you cope with the pain? You know, is there any tips that you can give our nurses listening today about how to broach the subject, or do you feel it's important?
Oh, 100%. And, you know, just a little interesting nugget. I have a smartwatch that monitors, like, my heart rate and my stress levels and all of that. And I'm having a bit of a flare up at the moment. And I noticed that my metrics have changed really noticeably. So my body battery. So this is kind of measuring how much energy the device thinks that you will have for the day. My body battery has been at zero pretty much every day by the middle of the day. My heart rate, my resting heart rate has increased in the last 2 weeks, and my stress levels have gone up, even though I'm not necessarily changing anything in my day-to-day like activities. My body is feeling it, and I just think that's really I think it's a really interesting kind of side conversation. I was looking at it last night going, oh my god, and the flare, I noticed this flare starting about 10 days ago, and that's when my heart rate, my resting heart rate increased quite a bit, So your body is certainly under stress when you're having a flare, and pain is a huge contributor to that, because pain with HS, it's very, I mean, there's lots of different types of pain with HS, because when the lesion is, say, for example, and I talk about this in the HS flare, when it's building, when the lesion is kind of filling up and getting swollen and sore, that's one type of pain. It's constant. It's very achy. It's very deep seated. And, you know, it's just this horrible, dull, constant pain. And then when you move, you might get a sharp kind of electric shock. And then, like sometimes you feel like you're being stabbed, or sometimes you feel like you've been burnt, you know, with the hot. Mm-hmm. And it really, it's very difficult to fully describe. For me, when I start experiencing pain, I do go and straight to over-the-counter paracetamol and ibuprofen, and I'll kind of alternate them, and I'll just try and have something in my system all the time. It doesn't fully resolve it, but it does help. Mm-hmm. If I need stronger medication, I will definitely take it. I'll go to the doctor, or sometimes I have, you know, some that I have left over from a previous experience, whether it was a surgery or a bad flare. So I have no problem taking, stronger painkillers if needed. Sometimes I'll use a hot pack to try and draw the lesion, or let's call them abscesses for this conversation, mm-hmm. to try and bring it to a head. And then sometimes I use ice packs, and especially if I'm going to bed, because aside from the actual pain, they also get very itchy, and itchiness is the most horrific thing to have, like when you're trying to sleep. So I'll often like literally just go to bed with ice packs down my underpants into my thighs. I take a lot of baths. So if I'm starting to flare, my water usage goes through the roof, because I'll be in a bath two times a day, just trying to get some kind of comfort, I suppose. And the heat does help me. But it's very different for every person. So I definitely think counselling on pain and pain management is a huge part of HS, because it affects your ability to, you know, to do anything, to reach things, to walk, to sit, to sleep, to even just sit and relax and watch a movie. I'm sitting with my arm, my flare is in this, my left armpit at the moment, and I'm sitting with my arm perched up on the table, because to sit with my arm down by my side is a little bit painful, you know, and it's kind of even positioning yourself can be a challenge. So a lot of patients, myself included, will develop these kind of protective postures where you kind of hunch over a little bit, and we develop kind of funny walks and lower back pain and shoulder pain, and that's, I suppose, a secondary pain source as a result of the lesion. So, yeah, there's a lot to it. And then there's obviously the mental pain as well, which is very real and very difficult to manage as well.
That's a really great insight into pain. I think as nurses as well, going back to sometimes the basics, you know, assessing patients for pain, but, you know, there's certain things as a nurse we can do. We can, like you mentioned, the ice packs, you know, the heat, the baths, you know, we can step it up with over-the-counter medication, but then we can, you know, if we need to sort of delve into bigger, you know, layers of this, you know, we can sort of the importance of incorporating the pain teams in secondary, or, you know, the GP in primary care, just to sort of step up the medication. And that's where it's really important, I think, working in a multidisciplinary sort of teamwork with HS as well, you know, so we've got the input from different sources. And if we're lucky, you know, for the mental health side of things as well, the psychology or the, you know, what we can do to refer patients on. So it is really important, I think, to have that conversation with patients and document it as well, because that then goes through. Yeah, absolutely.
And just, I suppose, to highlight, people with HS have been living with it for so long, they might not appear to be in pain.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they might just, like, because I do it all the time, I'm like, oh, I'm grand, I'm fine. But then I get home at the end of the day and I'm exhausted. I would be so exhausted. And it's from, obviously, from your immune system is in overdrive, but also from just trying to keep it together, basically, for the day, you are in pain. So it does take a toll. And I think a lot of patients are very stoic about it and they kind of play it down. So just to be mindful of that. And and in the HS flare kind of process, for me anyway, it gets so swollen and sore that, you know, I've been in situations on a few occasions where I have a blade and a syringe out to try and open my skin myself. And the only reason I didn't fully do it was because I had so much scarring in the area, I couldn't actually figure out where to try and open my skin. And that's the kind of desperation that patients experience, and a lot of people do actually lance their own skin. And if you actually think about that, it's just so horrific, so dangerous. But that's the kind of, you're in so much pain, you will do anything, like including cutting your own skin open to try and relieve and resolve that pain.
And unfortunately, and sad to say, it's true. I mean, you know, it's such a valuable point to make there, Suzanne, because, you know, we do know our, you know, myself included, know your regular patients that come in, and, you know, they may be a bit more, like you say, disguising the pain, but the amount of patients that say they've, you know, cut their skin, or, you know, drained it themselves, or, you know, got the, you know, physically cut their skin, and it's soul destroying. And, you know, what patients have to go through, especially in this day and age, it's crazy. You mentioned earlier about the flare, and I know you've talked a wee bit about, you know, your heart rate and how you've talked some of the aspects of it. Could you go from A to B to C with the pain flare, how it all sort of materializes, and talk
of course and I suppose it's really, it's great to be able to talk about this, because when I go to the doctor, he or she is just seeing me at a certain point in time. So they're either seeing, what I've been doing more recently has been, I'm about to get a flare. This is what it's going to look like if we don't kind of intervene really early, as soon as possible. And sometimes the early intervention helps, and sometimes in this case didn't really help that much, but I think it might have helped a bit. But so at the very beginning of a flare, for me anyway, I will wake up and I'll feel just unwell. So I feel kind of, I'm probably getting a flu here. But then I'll notice, okay, a lump, there's a lump in my armpit, and it's a bit sore and it's a bit red, and I need to be careful with this now. And it will kind of start to swell. So by the evening time, it will be definitely a bit red and a little bit swollen, and over the next few days it will just keep becoming more swollen, more painful. The skin gets very stretched, it turns all sorts of funny colors. It can be very red and then white, like with a big kind of red circle around it, because I have a lot of scarring there as well, so it kind of, it's really hard to actually see what's happening. But if the skin gets really stretched and tight and sore, and eventually then it will start to drain. And while it's swelling, you can tell that there's fluid building up in under the skin, and it's pronounced, like the kind of the swelling. If you lift up both arms, you can see this armpit is concave, this armpit is convex. There is a distinct difference between the two. So it will eventually open, and a tiny point, like we're talking a pinprick for me, it will start to drain, and it will just drain and drain and drain. And the volume of exudate that comes out is shocking. You know, it's kind of fascinating in a way that your body can produce all of this fluid, but it's also really shocking. And it can be very thick, thick exudate. It can be very thin, serous fluid sometimes. Sometimes it's bloody exudate. And sometimes you get all kind of versions from the one lesion as it starts to drain. And then you're kind of relieved because, okay, it's drained, that's great. But now you've got this kind of network of tunnels, for me anyway, underneath the skin that aren't really going to heal over. And so they will continuously produce exudate and drain. So the opening that's in my skin now, it will probably continue. So this, the one that I have at the moment, it drained properly last week. And now it's kind of just producing a variety of exudate every day. So it's still draining. It's still very painful. And it's a different type of pain now because it's kind of maintenance. It's not like maintenance. It's very hard to describe, but the skin is like, it's like a sponge underneath my skin. And it's full of exudate. And if I press it, exudate will come out. There's a little bit of granulation tissue as well, peeping out of the opening. And the opening is actually starting to get bigger, and it looks like it's more, but like becoming a bit of an ulcer, actually. And, you know, this will continue for, I don't actually know how long it's going to continue for, to be perfectly honest. It might be a couple more weeks until it calms down. But I have had flares that once they've ruptured and drained, I've had them for years, like in that kind of draining state. It's really hard to manage because you're just leaking all the time in essence. And the skin is left, it's very pitted, it's scarred. You've got this kind of granulation tissue trying to peep out and heat, like the skin underneath is trying to heal, but it can't because it's tunnels. You've got these tunnels under the skin. And it's just very painful and I suppose also disfiguring. And it also, apart from the physical pain and all of that, you also have these really disfiguring lesions on really delicate areas of your body that you have to try and manage. And that's a whole separate thing in terms of your body image and your confidence and how you carry yourself in the world. So yeah, it's just a flare is a very challenging thing to describe because I think they're different for every patient. They'll have a different experience. And then the clinician is only really seeing the patient at a point in time. So you might see a patient, if it was like day 1 to 3 of my flares, you'd be like, that's not bad, you're fine. Or if you saw me at the end, towards the very tail end of the flare, where it's kind of like it's stopped draining that much and it's just a little droplet every now and then, you'd like the same, you'd be like, oh, it's not that bad, you're fine. Mm-hmm. But it's the time in between it's a nightmare to
it's so difficult. And having, you know, we see so many patients with, you know, the issues of having this constant exudate, and you know, that's difficult to manage when you've got everyday life going on as well. And we do know, unfortunately, you know, we've had patients present with using sanitary towels, and you know, it's really difficult to get dressings. I know it's impossible for us in secondary. I know primary are having difficulty getting dressings now. So how do you cope with that? How did you deal with that?
Well, not very well. it was a challenge. And like, I actually, so it was such a big part of my life. And I suppose when you look at the treatments that I've had over the years, like I've been on hundreds of different antibiotics, oral antibiotics, IV antibiotics. I had a PICC line at one stage because I was on ertapenem. And that's quite an ordeal because you have a nurse coming to the house twice a day to, administer that, because we in Ireland anyway, you're not able to do it yourself. So I've had, you know, every antibiotic under the sun, which isn't great for you anyway. You know yourself, I've had steroid injections straight into the lesions, been on lots of different hormones like androgen blockers and metformin. I'm on biologics. I've tried two different biologics, but loads of surgeries. I've been in hospital, you know, more than 20 times due to HS, whether it's for surgery or IV antibiotics. And sometimes my GP would be like, I actually don't know what else to do with you. Yeah. You just have to go to the hospital. Loads of home care with post-surgical wound care. And this is what kind of, I suppose, really got to me is there is post-surgical wound care services for patients, and there's, you know, that's not a problem, but it's the day-to-day wound care that was really a big challenge for me. The post-surgical stuff is, I mean, that's, I learned a lot from post-surgical wound care about different dressings and how to kind of try and retain things in place, especially in these difficult areas. And to be honest, nothing really ever worked.
Yeah.
The tapes and different adhesive options would either kind of peel away or they'd fall off. And then the stronger adhesives would really damage my skin. So I was ending up with all of these adhesive rashes and skin stripping. And when you're doing day-to-day wound care, you have to try and you have to dress the same area over and over and over again. It's not like a normal cut where you stick a plaster on it and it's gone in a few days. You're applying and removing adhesive to an armpit or to a groin day in, day out for weeks on end. So that became a huge obsession of mine, if I'm being honest, because I wanted to just live my life. I was a young woman in my 20s, and I was entering the workforce at this stage, and I was just like, you know, there has to be better than me. We have to be able to do better than this. So I suppose I do work in wound care now, as you know, Tina, and I am trying to change a lot in terms of the provisions for people with HS, because we need effective wound care. It's, you know, a huge part of your daily life when you are living with exuding lesions day in and day out. And there was nothing really available for HS previously.
So thank you very much again, Suzanne. And I hope today that everyone has enjoyed listening to these podcasts. And also, you know, we've got lots of key nuggets there for knowledge and helping our patients with HS. So thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website bdng.org.uk and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.